burning houses, fender benders, and consumers. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. There's news this morning that consumer spending this spring spiked upward, as did personal income, both before and after taxes. Consumer spending went up 1% in April, spending on everything from kitty litter to ketchup. This is the biggest jump in consumer spending in 7 years. Let's check in with Julie Neiman, the analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, David.
All right, so the consumers were a little bit more vigorous, a little bit more willing to spend during the month in question.
And this is a trend. Consumers are back. It's being very cautious. They're moving ahead. I saw a really great comparison, which is very apt in this case. It's a car wreck versus a house burning down. You forget a car wreck in about 6 months, but a house burning down, it's forever imprinted on your soul.
The house burning down being the 2008-2009 financial disaster.
And that's what happened to consumers here. Consumers have been coming back very, very cautiously. And everything has to rise before consumer spending does. Personal income is finally rising on a very modest level, which is very good still. Job growth, it's pretty respectable. Inflation, that's always been the bane of consumers. It's very modest at this point. And they have cleared their balance sheets, either through bankruptcy or cutting back on spending. But debt is way down. So you're looking at spending, that's really up strongly at this point.
All right, spending, but on what?
Cars, housing, durable goods, everything. You know, you've got to furnish the new home. And this is solid spending. This isn't credit card stretching. Credit card recovery is only 2 years old. So consumers are not stretched by a long measure here. Contrary to what the politicians say, we're okay.
Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company, our analyst from the Heartland on Tuesdays. Julie, thank you.
You bet.
The big strike at Verizon is set to end with a tentative deal on a 4-year contract for 40,000 employees. How are the two sides feeling? Here's Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein.
Probably relief, to be honest, David. The strike was long enough and impacted business enough that Verizon executives had warned a loss of customers would hurt second quarter earnings. For workers, their health insurance ran out at the beginning of the month. The union made concessions on healthcare, while Verizon offered more than 10% raises and added 1,400 new union jobs. Roger Entner of Recon Analytics said he thinks workers made out so well because Verizon plans to get out of the landline business.
They needed to bring this labor conflict to an end, to stop the distractions that impacted the wireless groups, where really the money comes in from.
He says Verizon's vast landline network is shrunk to just states in the Northeast. Union leaders hold out hope this 40,000-strong workforce will be tapped to build out Verizon's fiber optic cable business. The question for both sides is whether Verizon is committed to staying in landlines.
Dan, thank you. We're also covering the European Union's new rules to stop hate speech online. If you missed that on the air, it's in the first Marketplace podcast of the day. In this election year, with so much media attention focused on the next day and the next week in politics and policy, we're trying to use a device to look big picture and long term at issues that a new president might have to deal with, time frame 20 or 50 years. It was an idea inspired by something the late writer and social critic Kurt Vonnegut once told me in an interview when he pointed out this country has no cabinet-level secretary of the future. Implication, maybe it should. And if we had one, what would this Secretary of the Future worry about? Well, today, from the Marketplace desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman looks at the future of the built environment under the influence of climate change.
I've walked out to a bluff just inland from the beach in Los Angeles, 150 feet above the bustling metropolis. My guide is Tom Ford. He's executive director of the Bay Foundation, which works on coastal restoration.
We've got folks that are living absolutely right on the coast, and a lot of challenges, 76 miles of dense urban establishment.
Ford is pointing down the cliffs to one of the last expanses of native wetlands here, 600 acres surrounded by low-lying L.A., the airport, movie studios, million-dollar homes, and multi-million-dollar malls.
You know, the folks living up on the bluff in Santa Monica, they're not going to be underwater, but everything between there and here will be.
The Bay Foundation is working with state and local agencies to restore the wetlands, build up sand dunes, make the coast and inland basin more resilient to flooding and high tides. Problem is, it's going to take a lot more engineering and money to deal with what we can't see from here: hazardous chemicals, underground utilities.
the coastal intercept sewer. It's carrying 35 million gallons a day. The pipe is currently in the beach.
Under the beach.
Under the beach. And that beach isn't going to be the beach there. And the last thing we need is a 5-foot pressurized sewer main getting undermined by waves, cracking in half, and having a septic volcano.
Nationwide, there is little coordinated planning or funding to deal with this issue. Ben Strauss at Climate Central has mapped out the potential impact of sea level rise.
It is reasonable to imagine defending most coastal places, with a couple of exceptions, South Florida, parts of Louisiana.
That's if sea level rises 2 feet by 2100, but
with 6 feet, it becomes pretty much impossible to imagine. We see severe challenges to places like New York City or Boston.
Let's just play that out. If you can't defend, you have to retreat, right?
Yes.
And no one in government is planning that battle yet. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And the illustrator of Lewis Carroll's classic Alice in Wonderland could not stand the first edition, complaining Macmillan, the publisher, had botched the printing. The author agreed, saying the first edition should be turned into waste paper, and only a few survived. Well, the Guardian newspaper says one of the remaining Alice first editions could sell for between $2 and $3 million at auction in New York next month. It's got that great Cheshire Cat illustration. The cat has fangs, and its persistent smile looks like it's about to leap out of the tree to chew your ankle. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.